All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you, live from West Virginia. Just posted a picture of our highly sophisticated studio at our Airbnb on X.
It's a big-time broadcast,
Sean. At Sean T. Pendergast. Yeah, I just posted. It is. It's a big-time broadcast.
You know,
yeah.
Real quick for the tech nerds or whomever else in here. Mm-hmm. We're in West Virginia where sometimes, you know, self-service and internet service can be kind of spotty. They have a Starlink here. And
in our Airbnb,
satellite internet. And I knew that it was fast. But when we ran the tests on it, I was kind of blown away by how far they've come compared to old satellite internet.
Yeah.
Because you and I tried to do a show with a satellite link up once, and it was a disaster.
Oh, it was horrible.
With the old way.
Yeah.
This is actually pretty damn impressive.
It is. Yeah. It is. And they did it for us because we weren't going to get this.
They upgraded it. Yeah.
They upgraded it for us. I got with the owners of this Airbnb, and I asked Parker, our boss. I said, hey, what do we need to know about the internet? He said, well, we need these readouts on it, and we need these numbers to be this and that. You can tell I'm very technical.
You run a speed test.
Yeah, I ran a speed test is what I did, and I shared the results with our boss, and he said, no, that's not going to work. And I told the owners that, and they messaged me back on Airbnb, and they said, we just upgraded to Starlink.
Good job, Sean.
And I said, trip on. Let's go.
You got things done.
Hell yeah.
Put your foot down.
Hell yeah. Let's segue over to the Texans' offensive line from last year.
Yeah.
This Washington Post article on Laramie Tunsil that dropped yesterday.
The offensive line from last year, which is like the old school DirecTV internet.
Yes.
Yeah, the satellite internet.
That was our first satellite experience.
Where we might as well have been a correspondent in Iraq. Yeah.
Yes.
You would ask a question, and then 7 seconds later, I would give an answer.
That's exactly right.
That was the offensive line.
That was the offensive
year.
Line.
That's what they were kind of operating. They were like, oh, there was the snap count.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, or they would go, let's go. Yeah. And then the ball would get snapped.
Then there was a lag.
Yeah, then there was a 7-second lag between Laramie Tunsil starting to block and the ball getting snapped. So same exact thing. Title of the article, I'll find who wrote it. Laramie Tunsil entered the NFL in infamy. 10 seasons later, he's a total pro.
A total pro.
So you see where this one is going, this article. This was written by someone named Adam Kilgore.
Yeah.
Adam Kilgore wrote this article. I would say the overall, we're not going to go paragraph by paragraph. Chris Strauser, the former offensive line coach for the Texans, is interviewed and probably quoted in this article more than Laramie Tunsil.
He's the star.
He's the really? Chris Strauser is the focal point of this article almost. And he says that Laramie Tunsil, not the problem. Not the problem at all in that room last year, because he heard the reports of the toxic nature of the offensive line room from Albert Breer. And
I do think that's where the use of the word toxic is where things get kind of dicey.
So you start debating semantics,
right? I think that it's very possible that like Laramie Tunsil wasn't going to be the solution when it came to trying to infuse some semblance of the swarm mentality onto the offense or in the offensive line room. For where they needed to go, I don't want to say Laramie Tunsil was the problem, but I think at his price tag especially, he wasn't going to be the solution for a lot of wholesale changes that needed to be made.
Yeah, here's some of the quotes from Chris Strauser. Laramie's one of the best guys I've ever coached. At the end of the day, every single day in the last 2 years I worked with that guy, I walked away thinking, quote, this guy's got a good heart, end quote. All right, so far that matches up. I've not talked to anybody who dislikes Laramie Tunsil.
No, I don't think he was a jerk in general or anything.
No. Strauser goes on to say this. By the way, Bobby Slowick, shade alert.
Okay,
you ready? I don't think our room, the offensive line room, was good last year. It was a combination of a lot of things, by no means Laramie being the issue or the main issue. It was a combination of so many things. A lot of guys trying to figure out an offense that, honestly, we were not that well educated in.
Yeah. So that's Bobby Slowick, shade, but also, I mean, Chris Strauser, it's your job to educate your damn self.
Yes.
This is where I get some of the mistakes that were made in these last couple of years are all the hallmarks of a first-time head coach just making some mistakes in his hiring process, making Bobby Slowick the offensive coordinator, but then also having an offensive line coach who really wasn't familiar with that type of a scheme.
Yeah.
And then not doing anything to get better at it, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Chris Strauser, it's an excuse in year one, perhaps, when everything's getting to happen on the fly. Educate your damn self.
Yeah.
You know, so many times, guys, and I have no idea what Chris Strauss did with his time in the offseason, but sometimes guys just get to a point where they kind of feel like, I'm the cock of the walk. I've been an NFL head coach. And they stop that process of learning and reinventing themselves.
Well,
and I buy that as an excuse for year one.
Yeah.
For year two, educate your damn self.
Well, this is where, this is where we've got to be critical of D'Amico Ryans.
Right, right.
D'Amico Ryans, Bobby Slowick, as it turned out, was not a good hire. You fired him after 2 years.
Yeah.
Chris Strauser was not a good hire, and maybe the signs should have been there, A, when he comes in, not from this system. Okay, so that's something, but your solution is an acceptable one. A smart person would educate themselves. I mean, we're not talking about splitting the atom here. It's football. Educate yourself on it. But I think in the second year for Strauser, when we heard the rumblings after all this fallout, that it turns out he was thinking of retiring.
Going into last season.
Going into 2024. Yeah. And ultimately you wind up promoting the guy who was in the building already anyways.
Yeah.
In retrospect, it would have made more sense to promote Cole Popovich a year earlier. I don't know if Cole Popovich would have made sense executing Bobby Slowick's system last year. That might not have worked for anybody given the way Bobby was coordinating things, but it would have been a better solution than having the guy who had 1 foot out the door already.
It really, honestly, it feels like so many movies or scenarios or TV shows where Cole Popovich, I believe, according to D'Amico Ryans, had a chance to go somewhere else last year. I can't remember if D'Amico said that or somebody else.
Yeah.
But Cole Popovich apparently liked it being in D'Amico Ryan's team and the situation here. So he turned down an opportunity elsewhere, probably because he knew that Chris Strauser was thinking about retiring and there was just a matter of time until he got his opportunity. That's a really bad situation when you're in a problematic situation.
Mm-hmm.
That the guy, the more talented underling is kind of being held down by a guy who's just trying to bolster his pension a little bit or whatever it might be when you're the problem situation on the team.
Yeah. D'Amico Ryans has got a lot of things right in his 2 years plus as the head coach. A lot of things. He's done a great job so far. That, I don't know if it's a blind spot. You know, Bobby was a guy who he had a relationship with, and then the Strauser hire. Those are two hires that obviously didn't work out, and they're trying to fix it now.
And it's a classic thing that happens, especially when coaches are trying to put a staff together on the fly, and it's time sensitive. It's not like you're going off trying to pluck an offensive coordinator somewhere in August. You can't wait. You got to get started. And it's a classic mistake. I mean, Kubiak in the first year hired Richard Smith as a defensive coordinator. I personally was not impressed one bit by a single damn thing Richard Smith ever did. I don't know why he was a defensive coordinator. He had been a defensive coordinator in the NFL before, but his best trip was with the Dolphins when Saban was his coach. So Saban was the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not an unforgivable mistake or anything. I credit D'Amico for taking measures to rectify it after 2 years instead of letting it linger on.
Okay, here's a quote from Laramie Tunsil in this article. If you're just getting in your car, you're just tuning in, there's a big Washington Post profile on Laramie Tunsil where clearly the tone of the article is like, hey, nothing that went on in Houston was Laramie's fault, and we're just thrilled to have him here. And they are thrilled to have him there, and we'll see. He doesn't have to be the leader in that offensive line room like he was anointed here. Laramie says that the rumors of the toxicity did make him feel a certain kind of way. Quote, it did make me feel a way because our room wasn't like that. Did we play well? No. Did CJ get sacked a lot? Yes. I see where the rumors could be made up and come from, but I feel like we had a great-ass room.
I did.
He did.
Wait, didn't he in this very article talk about how many problems? He said it wasn't a great room. Did he not just say that in one of the quotes?
Strauser said it. Did Laramie say it?
Oh, okay. No, Strauser said that. This is Laramie saying
this. This is Laramie saying it. We'll get to more Strauser.
Yeah, okay. Well, the one thing that Strauser says when he talks about him being a leader is that he didn't necessarily want to be the guy in the room who was responsible for the room, which is fair because he's not the coach. Right? But he was a captain.
He was a captain.
Yeah.
He wants to show, this is another quote from Strauser, Laramie wants to show up and play football and protect the quarterback. I respect that about him.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to be in charge of the offensive line room. But he does like having that C on his chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of frustrating stuff in this article.
What I hated seeing over and over again was, hey, his teammates voted him captain. Right. The offensive players vote on the offensive captains. And you're telling me that group of slack-jawed idiots and young players knew exactly what they needed in a captain? That's like, go to any high school student council when, you know, the good-looking jock is up against the actually capable president. And I say this as a guy who was an unqualified class president for a short stretch of time before I abdicated my throne. Sometimes it's a popularity contest, you know?
Okay.
It should have been Tyler Tilling. Okay. Everybody knows that in hindsight.
I've been saying it for years.
Yeah.
Okay, two things. I need a 30 for 30 on the presidential stretch of Seth Payne at his high school. I need to know the platform that you ran on.
It was not a toxic environment, Sean. It was certainly dysfunctional.
I need to know more, and I don't think I'm going to find it out from you. I need to find Tyler Tilling is what I need to do.
We blew our budget on parties in the first three weeks. It was,
The second thing of what the rant that you just went on. I'm glad that you separated the young players from the slack-jawed yokels in the offensive room. I'm like, okay, when you said slack-jawed yokels, I'm like, oh, CJ's not, oh, and then you said young players. I'm like, okay, good. Everybody who's like under the age of 25, they just don't know any better.
They don't know who they need to be led.
That's right.
Go ahead and have, go to boot camp and be sure you have the raw recruits select who their drill sergeant's going to be.
Guess what?
They're not going to make a great choice.
Well, that's what I heard. You know what I heard? Shaq Mason, slack-jawed yokel. Okay, this is the quote from this article in the Washington Post that I think is going to get people pulling over to the side of the road to throw up. The pre-snap penalties.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I know you've seen it already. I'm just asking if you're ready to hear it again.
Yeah.
Chris Strauser had this to say about Laremy Tunsil, who had, let's refresh, 19 accepted penalties against him last year. 19 accepted penalties.
Just by way of an illustration, the really, really genuinely all-pro offensive tackles rarely have more than 4 or 5 pre-snap penalties
19.
In a season. Yes,
yeah, it's an issue.
So whenever anybody says, well, he was just trying to get a jump on the snap count. Right. It's cheating.
Yeah.
Except the guys that are genuinely all-pro do it a lot better than Laremy did.
Yeah, I can't.
You know, they didn't hurt their team the way Laremy did.
I've been excited for a day now for you to react to this quote on the air because I got to read it to you yesterday. This is Strauser. Laremy tried to get better at it. We definitely did have a different cadence than what he was used to. I think he would say it was not that offensive tackle friendly. It took him a while both years to get used to it.
Both years?
As if the whole thing changes.
No, but what Chris doesn't realize is, like, no, this was already an issue before that. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so listen. According to Chris Strauser, Laremy Tunsil is the most gifted and awesome offensive tackle in all the world, and yet he's having an issue with the snap count when nobody else is.
Right.
So it's not Laramie's fault.
Yeah.
It's the center and the snap count's fault. But meanwhile, nobody else is having that same issue.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not buying your excuse.
It wasn't that offensive tackle friendly. Like, last I checked, teams play with 2 offensive tackles.
Yeah.
Last I checked, there's another one over there.
It wasn't.
His name's Titus Howard, who didn't jump all the time
it
like
wasn't
Laremy.
Every Texans offensive tackle over the past 6-7 right. years that's had an issue with it.
It's one.
And it's been with multiple different centers and snap counts.
Yes.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a selfish penalty.
Yeah.
It is. It's the people that would try to defend him would explain it like I'm an idiot or something. No, Seth, you see what he's doing is he's trying to time the snap count. I know that, you idiot, but it's selfish.
Yeah.
He's doing it at the expense. And it's taken 3rd and 6 and moving it back to 3rd and 11. You know who that doesn't really hurt? It doesn't hurt Laremy Tunsil because on 3rd and 11, he's still a really, really good pass protector.
Oh, he gets to show it off.
Who it hurts is the other 10 guys on the offense.
Yeah.
It makes it harder for CJ Stroud. It makes it harder for your rookie left guard. It makes it harder for all those guys, but it doesn't hurt Laremy Tunsil. It's selfish.
The other 10 guys on the offense, the defense is sitting over there hoping that a drive extends a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You convert a third down, you get a little bit more of a rest.
This sickens me, Chris Strauser.
Yeah.
Why did you do this interview?
Okay, well, I'm glad he did it. Because I'll tell you the one thing, if we bring it all, you know, bringing it back to the 2025 Texans, I feel better that this guy's not leading the offensive line room anymore.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, Cole Popovich, from what we've heard from him so far, from what we've heard about him so far, from being able to observe him coaching the offensive line, that looks like an offensive line coach. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if they got the bodies to make it work. I don't know if Cole Popovich is an actual good offensive line coach when he's the lead guy doing it, but I feel a whole hell of a lot better about the potential for that than reading the quotes about what was going on last year.
I've picked up a few things in Washington, and what they're saying in Washington is, we heard everybody in Houston say that Laremy Tunsil wasn't going to be a great leader, but look at him here. He's helping out Josh Connerly, yeah. The rookie offensive tackle. And it was funny because the picture the guy used was Josh Connerly in his full pads practicing, Laramie Tunsil not in pads.
Oh, so yeah.
He was clearly taking that practice off.
The little short shorts that he wears.
Yeah.
No question. Okay. Well, Washington will find out. They'll find out.
He might turn the corner and just be a different dude now.
Maybe. We'll see.
It's not like, again, he's a really, really good pass protector. He's a so-so run blocker, but he's not swarm. Like, there's no part of him that's swarm. That's not his game, which is fine. It's fine, and you can operate in different environments. In a Cliff Kingsbury offense, that might just be fine that he's not swarm, and they might not need it. But I think for a D'Amico team, that's not the type of player or ethos that he wants.
Definitely not. All right, we're going to do an emergency pettycast. We usually do it on Tuesdays at 8. Obviously, we've been doing two-hour shows the last couple of weeks, so we haven't had the chance to do one in several days. We're going to do one in just a little bit, because there's a lot to be petty about, and there's a lot of petty out there. Hell, I feel like we've warmed up for it in this segment here, talking about Laramie Tunsil and Chris Strouser. Before we do that, because I teased it, Dameon Pierce activated yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans talking about the running back position and how it's looked so far.
Our backs have done a really good job, man. Woody Marks has stepped in, and he's made some really nice runs over the past couple of days. Jawar is playing fast. It shows he's playing, and Chubb is – he plows behind his pads, and he's going to gain yardage. So all those guys collectively have done a really good job at the running back room.
I think that his description of Chubb right there is – and D'Amico himself has basically said that, Chubb's not the same type of athlete that he once was when he was younger and before he had this really, really bad knee injury a couple years ago. But in terms of just kind of plowing forward behind his pads, I can see where – with the things that they're working on offensively, it's I don't want to, they don't like us to give away too much, obviously. But it's stuff that the offensive linemen themselves have said. It's a lot of double teams. It's a lot of just mashing and smash mouth football where it's a physical style of play. And I think that's where if Nick Chubb doesn't necessarily have the same fifth gear that he used to, that's all right if he can still just lean forward and drive and consistently churn out positive yardage.
Yeah.
Big runs are nice, but what really the Texans needed last year was if you're going to run on first down, you got to get at least 4 yards.
Yep.
You got to keep the line of scrimmage moving forward, and I think Chubb might still be valuable in that regard.
I think in that regard, and I think also if it's a team that has leads in the fourth quarter, is Chubb a back that can close a game for you? Like Mixon was able to do in the opener against Indianapolis. They were really leaning on him. They needed that catch from Nico to keep a drive going. And especially in that playoff game.
The Chargers game. 12 straight runs.
With Joe Mixon. So I think if Chubb can be that guy, he doesn't need to be the guy that's breaking off 75-yard runs and knocking five guys over. If he can get you 4 or 5 yards in the fourth quarter and just keep you in good down and distance situations, like you said, then I think that'll be good. Dameon Pierce getting dropped in to this. Where do you think Dameon fits in this mix right now?
I think Dameon,
because Chubb's been the ones.
If Mixon were out, I think week one, right this moment, they'd probably have Dameon Pierce and Nick Chubb do a committee affair.
Okay.
But on first and second down.
Yeah.
And then on third down, I think Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan and Agumba Wale, depending on what the matchups are and what they want. If they need a guy for pass protection, it's one thing. If they just want some guy to get downfield and make receptions, that's another. But I think they've got options on third down.
But you're talking about week one. I mean, you just rattled off like six names of running backs.
They're nine running backs on the roster.
They're not going to all make the team. That's
no, they're all going to make the team.
D'Amico's right. Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan have had good camps so far.
They have had good camps. I think that...
Woody's going to make the team.
Woody's going to make the team, and I think Jawar Jordan might be in a position where the Texans like him, but unless there's a rash of injuries, they're going to try to hide him on the practice squad.
Yeah.
Which, for those of you who don't know, practice squad is dicey because once you put a guy on practice squad, any team in the league can sign him like he's a free agent.
Yeah.
You have the ability to match...
Yeah.
If another team offers something. But it's a little bit of a risk. But Jawar Jordan being a 180-pound guy, I think they'll probably, if there's enough healthy guys above him, I think they're probably going to most likely make him a practice
squad. It'd be interesting. I think there's a chance Pierce could get moved. We'll see. We got to see how he fits in this system. He didn't fit in the last one.
Agumba Wale is the interesting one because he's got, there's only so much he's going to provide as a running back, but he's so good as a complete package special teams guy and a guy that you can at least rely on him to fill a role at running back. And that's, they might end up having to make a really hard emotional decision just because I know they, I love Ogunbowale.
Well,
they
Nick, love Ogunbowale. Well, when we talked to Nick last week, he singled Ogunbowale out.
Yeah.
Remember, unsolicited, singled him out as a example of a vet who just, man, you just know what you're getting out of him.
Yeah. And again, that's where, depending on how healthy Mixon is and depending on how healthy or what they think Chubb's ceiling is, the decision between Damian Pierce and Ogunbowale might really end up being the one.
Yeah.
Because Pierce is now, by running back standards, he's not a young guy anymore. And he's had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
It's not just one or two injuries. I mean, he's been injured a
lot. Every year.
Including years where he's not playing a lot. And that's there. You've got young guys that you feel good about. It might be Damian Pierce versus Juwan Jordan. And how are you going to make the decision there? But if they need an all-purpose type back, if Joe Mixon's injury were to extend into the regular season, I think that's where they might say, all right, well, like, at this point, we need Damian more so than we need Juwan Jordan.
Yeah, maybe. If I had to bet, I'm going to bet Damian's not on this team in week one. I'm guessing he gets moved or he gets squeezed, because even Mixon hurt has to be on the 53-man roster when you leave camp, and then you can put him on IR or whatever it is. So that's, you know, it's a tricky puzzle to put together. All right, we haven't gotten to get petty, at least declare ourselves petty in a while now. You ready to do a petty cast?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it.
I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, let's do it here.
All bottled up.
Yeah, man. backed up full of petty.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's do this. We do this normally every Tuesday at 8 a.m. is when we get petty, but we're handing the baton over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at 8 a.m. today. We're back to 4 hours starting tomorrow. So let's start with this one. Mary Kay Cabot. She writes for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. She covers the Browns beat up in Cleveland. And very well-respected, longtime writer. And she was speaking at the Hall of Fame this past weekend. I don't know what capacity, but she was up there speaking. And she made a crack about Bill Belichick. Here's what it sounds. She talked about covering Belichick during his Cleveland time, early in her career as a beat reporter, about how intimidating he was. Mm-hmm. And it led to this wisecrack about 2025 Belichick.
Eventually, I had to learn to stand up to him. During one of those yelling matches, I told him, if you don't have the footballs to say that to the guys, then don't say it to me. Bam. But now, I totally understand why Bill gave me such a hard time. I was 28 at the time, and he just couldn't relate to a woman that old.
Yeah, a little rim did shot in the background.
I didn't.
I think somebody, maybe Ben did, or else, yeah. So that was funny. You know, it's your classic up in front of people wisecrack that'll get the laugh from the room.
Would have been better if she wasn't so obviously reading from a.
Yeah, you know, she's not a stand-up comedian, so she gets a little bit of latitude. Obviously, got a lot of attention. And she almost seems a little bit Southern Belle about the attention that it's gotten from a lot of people.
Yeah,
Mary
Kay Cabot.
Didn't
expect me to be there. Yeah, it's just me making fun of Belichick's younger girlfriend.
Just a little joke.
She wasn't making fun of the girlfriend. She's making fun of Belichick.
Making fun of Belichick. But here's the thing. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, tweeted about that wisecrack.
Yeah.
And tweeted out about it, put a link up to an article about it. And on Twitter, it got reposted. Got reposted. Somebody responded to it. There was a follower that responded to the joke, being maybe out of line, I guess, or something like that. You know who reposted that response?
Jordan Hudson,
the girlfriend.
24, 25.
She's still 24. Yeah, she might. Yeah, whatever. Way younger than Belichick, girlfriend. Yeah. Yeah. So she reposted the response saying that joke was out of line.
Oh, what? She just said it was out of line?
A Twitter follower responded to Florio's tweet saying that the joke was out of line.
Yeah.
Oh, and then she just reposted it.
She reposted it.
That person. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So.
You know what? She gets 1.5 stars for pettiness there.
Okay.
Make a comment, Jordan.
Yeah, say something.
Come on. What are you doing?
Say something.
Be sassy.
Yeah.
You know, look, Belichick's not with you because you're some haggard old energy devoid cow.
No.
You know? Be sassy.
Sassy.
Slice this thing up.
Okay, next one.
I forgot. He's with you for your brain.
Yeah. She's a philosophy major, Seth.
That's right.
Philosophy major. Next one. Johnny Manziel and Gilly, who has the $1 million worth of game podcast, right? Philly guy. And Johnny Manziel. So Gilly has been going after Cam Newton after, since Cam Newton has been going after Jalen Hurts.
It's Gilly the Kid, isn't it?
Gilly the Kid is, yeah, at Gilly the Kid on Twitter if you want to find him. So Cam Newton was critical of Jalen Hurts, said he's not a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah.
Gilly, coming to Jalen Hurts' defense on social media, posted about how Cam was overrated. He posted a video of himself hugging the Lombardi trophy, thanking Jalen Hurts as if Gilly was on the team. Johnny Manziel saw the video of Gilly throwing shade at Cam and hugging the Lombardi trophy, Johnny Manziel, and said, yo, at Gilly the Kid, you may be the biggest effing loser on the planet, talking like you've effing done anything on a football field. If I see you, just know I'm going to slap the F out of you. Trust.
Yeah.
Okay, that's petty, right?
Johnny,
that's pretty good. That's better than 1.5.
At any given time, though, you never know whether Johnny is like, is he in his fighting trim or is he 137 pounds with bags under his
eyes?
We
know he's skinny.
Right. Yeah.
But is it good skinny or bad skinny? All right, so Gilly saw this and replied. Now, here's what you need to picture. Gilly is in a Philadelphia Eagles jersey, and this is a direct response to Johnny Manziel, and thus Gilly's face is covered in white powder from the nose down.
Like he's Al Pacino, who just gone face down in a mound of cocaine.
And the video started with him going, Johnny, you must look like this. And the camera swings over in front of him. Here's the crescendo of Gilly's 3-minute message. We've only got about a minute of it. Now, his message to Johnny Manziel.
Now, let me tell you something, Johnny. I need you to check into AA, Alcohol Anonymous, and I need you to check the f*** out of AAB, African American Business, Johnny. This shit had nothing to do with you. Sit your dumb ass down somewhere. You hear me? Now, Cam said what he said about Jalen. I told Cam he did something you couldn't do, win a Super Bowl. And then Cam, big, goofy, extra sensitive ass, started talking personal shit. So you and Cam could both sit y'all super goofy asses down somewhere. Cocaine Johnny and big and sensitive. You big sassy ass. Sit your dumb ass down somewhere. I don't know what the you got going on, but I told you neither one of y'all could with Jalen. And then you talk about I'm the biggest loser. You ain't did nothing on the football field. Neither did you, Johnny. You was in a league for 2 weeks. They sent you to the Australian Kangaroos. I think you did 2 years with the Lithuanian Bombers or something. Because you talking about, you ain't did shit either. Get the fuck out of here, Johnny. Right.
Love how he's treating the Canadian Football League like it's on the other side of the universe.
The Lithuanian Bombers.
The Lithuanian Bombers.
That was more about that. That was like a European football league. World League of American Football, whatever it was. That's one rule that I feel like they need to bring back the rookie symposium for is just don't get in any kind of social media battle with a rapper.
No,
you're gonna lose at some point. You'll still have your fans behind you saying that Gilly the Kid is an idiot or whatever. You're gonna lose. You're gonna lose. You're not gonna be able to compete with Gilly the Kid with a face full of fake cocaine
the visual,
on his face.
In re-listening to that, I'm like, on a scale of 1 to 10, the humor in listening to it is like a good 7.5. It's a 9.5 when you see the visual of Gilly just covered, like baby powder covered all over his face.
Johnny, I feel like Johnny needs to stay off social media as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
And
with that.
He probably makes good money on social media.
Probably
That's hard. It's like Antonio Brown. I don't think the healthiest thing for him is to be on social media all the time. But at the same time, I don't know how he's going to earn a living without social media.
It's like kind of funny, too.
He makes really good money on social media,
For sure.
It's never been a better time to be a person that really, for your own mental health, shouldn't be on social media.
Yeah.
To capitalize on being on social media.
It is, man. Yeah. It is. All right. Mike McDaniel versus Tyreek Hill. That's another one. A player on his team.
Yes.
This was Tyreek Hill earlier this week when he was asked, what would your recommendation be for short yardage situations for the Dolphins?
Take Devon out on third down. What? That's my honest opinion. If it's third and short, he's not a power back. I be telling him that in the locker room, but he a power back. I love Devon though, but if I'm being honest, like, that's why you got Jalen Wright. That's why you got Ollie Gordon. For those kind of situations.
I guess Devon is obviously Achane.
Yeah, that's
who is their best running back.
Basically questioning play calling and player usage. And the head coach. The thing I love about Tyreek Hill, just like the name of his podcast, it had to be said.
It needed to be said.
No. That's again.
It does not need to be said.
Just because you think it's true or it's your opinion or just because something is definitely objectively true, it does not always have to be said out
correct.
Loud or yeah. publicly. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's but I'm glad he did it for the pettycast.
You know, I am too. I'm 100% I'm thrilled. Mike McDaniel had a response to this. Mm. Here was Mike McDaniel when it was brought to his attention that Tyreek Hill was giving his opinions on how the Dolphins should handle short yardage situations on offense.
I thought it was genius reporting by Tyreek, seeing how we had a short yardage period that very day that you guys were in attendance for. And his suggestion was, I guess, congruent with Coach Studesville. That's exactly how we repped the backs in that short yardage period that very day. But we thought it was funny that he reported the news that wasn't news on that practice day in that short yardage period that you guys were all there too for.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he thinks it's very funny.
It's all cleared up now. Yeah. Now I totally understand and get whatever the hell he was talking about.
Yeah. So that was Mike McDaniel's response. Mike McDaniel had another quote that was getting some traction yesterday. He did the thing where someone comes in and you walk into a room and someone says, good day. And Mike McDaniel did the thing, good day. It's a great day, you know. So I think D'Amico does that. D'Amico, you know, we played in our open. Great day. Here was Mike McDaniel on why it was such a great day yesterday.
You should stand corrected. Good morning. False. Great morning. Let's go.
Why great?
Hmm?
What makes this one great?
Because we're another day closer to death.
I was thinking about this yesterday. You know how like you look forward to things?
Yeah.
Like to me, I always look forward to vacations. Like part of going on a vacation is the anticipation of going on the vacation. It sounds like death is the vacation for Mike McDaniel.
That's why they call it the dirt nap.
It's one day. Everybody loves a good nap.
Yeah. You're free from all the troubles of this
world. I never really thought about it until Mike McDaniel said that yesterday.
Yeah. That's why I know. That's why people talk about the, you know.
Got to be more nihilistic.
Yeah. One day closer to death.
Yeah. Okay.
If you take the most positive spin, it's like, yeah, I'm appreciating this day because I am one day closer to death. I got to really be sure I appreciate this
day. Well, people do say, like, you know, you go and you know, if you're religious, you meet your Lord. And Savior, and
it's a memento mori, Sean. You remember that one day you're going to die.
Memento mori.
It's what they used to have when a Roman emperor would be named emperor, and they would have the parade. There was a person that would sit beside him, whispering that in his ear, like basically, remember that one day you will die.
Okay,
this isn't like this. It's all transient, and it, like, don't get too high with the highs.
Okay,
don't get too low with the lows. It's just like, remember, no matter how much praise and love and everything else that everybody is heaping on you, at the end of the day, we all end up in the same
place. It's all well and good. If you would just stop whispering it to me when we go to an Astros game. I'm just trying to enjoy the game.
It can be a very positive thing, memento mori.
Sure.
But you got to spend some time with it.
Yeah.
It's depressing at first. I always tell you, like, you got to think about death and mortality a little bit every day.
Yep.
But just for a little bit.
Yes.
Don't sit in a dark room all day thinking
that's
about
bad.
It.
Yeah, don't
do that.
But
the more time you spend with it, the more comfortable you get
when
with it.
When it arrives.
And it just kind of liberates you to be like, oh, yeah, that's right.
No,
I'm
for sure.
Someday.
Like the doorbell rings one day and you open it and it's the Grim Reaper and you're like, hey, what's up, Grim?
Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Reaper. Sorry.
This is where I test myself on it, is when we get rough turbulence on an airplane.
Uh-huh.
I like, my ideal would be that every day I wake up and basically be like, yep, I'm prepared to die today.
Yeah.
And then like that, it's liberating in a lot of ways. So on an airplane, when it gets really dicey, and every now and then when you see the flight attendants get nervous,
I
check myself and I'm like, am I ready to go down? Yeah, I'm good.
You stand up and you yell, memento mori.
Don't worry, everybody.
Yeah.
We're all
memento mori
here.
Six sipper tyrannus.
Yes.
I mean, memento mori. What am I saying? I got one more petty. Ben, I know we're up against it, but since we're on the Dolph, I've got like five more petties. We had so much petty in here today. We might need to do an emergency one tomorrow again. As long as we're talking about the Dolphins, here was Tua, I guess, showing off for the media.
Yeah, this isn't the first time he's done
this thing, like trying to show off how hard it is to call a play in an NFL game. Here it is.
I can give you guys a play, and then if you guys want to repeat it after me, as if you guys were in the huddle, you guys can. All right. Should I go once or twice saying it?
Once.
All right, we got North Right Clamp, South Fox, H-Top, Pass 38, Top Gumby, XP, Sweat. Let's go. Anyone?
I got North Right on Gumby Clamp.
I got North.
Sounds like a false start to us.
Yeah, sounds like a pre-snap penalty to me. Oh, my gosh.
That's all right, listen, Tua, I don't know what point you're trying to prove. And it's like somebody who's fluent in Japanese getting up and saying, you know, like reeling off a sentence in Japanese and then, hey, speak it back to me. Not so smart, are you? Like, all right, way to stack the decks there, you injury-prone concussion garden. He's a concussion garden, is what he is.
He's a concussion garden,
let's
yes.
Have you do, hey, Tua, let's have you do that after your next concussion.
He's a,
that's going to be your concussion test. Hey, Tua. Recite this play for me. I'm going to say it once or twice.
And he's going to go, memento mori, memento mori.
Hey, Tua, is it, what day of the week is it?
Oh, man.
And then I want you to replace this.
Here. I'm watching this thing, and I'm like, man, do not let him get away with bullying you, media, all right? If they gave any of you as much time as he gets to study it, you too could recite one play out of an NFL playbook.
He was having fun with it.
I guess. I didn't. Yeah, it's true. I didn't see the context around it. It's a petty cast. Yeah. What can I say? All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Final.
In light of the petty cast, I have zero. Listen, Tua. Listen, Tua. Oh no, concussion. It's just, listen. You happen to be lucky enough to play in an era when they actually diagnose these things.
Yeah, that's
all right?
True.
The vast majority of us had no choice but to play through those concussions.
Yeah.
While getting screamed at by coaches who are upset about us making mental errors the entire time.
Yes.
What are you, stupid today, Payne? I feel kind of dumb.
My favorite part of this whole thing is you breaking the fourth wall by looking into the camera as if Tua is watching this YouTube right now. That was tremendous.
You know, we didn't get back in the day.
Oh, man.
9 months off for a head injury.
All right. things that we are looking for at practice today. Also, some depth chart news in the AFC South, one of which is really, really funny, and in Cleveland, too. We'll get to that as we get ready to hand things off to Texans Training Camp Live at the top of the hour. Stay there.